and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. Stoltenberg versus Blinken. Washington wants to keep the conflict in Ukraine going, but doesn't want to be on the hook for going in and fighting on Ukraine's behalf. This, of course, is what NATO membership would mean. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out in Budapest. George, you and I discussed on our Gaggle podcast the different messaging we heard last week coming from Secretary of State Blinken and NATO head Stoltenberg. They couldn't be more different, but we've been told all we have is Western unity in lockstep. But when Blinken was in Kyiv for the photo op of eating McDonald's, he projected a very different message. What was the point of you think the difference there between the two messages?
Well, Stoltenberg is the front man for NATO, so he comes out every few days, weeks, or whatever, and declares that NATO is the way forward for all countries, and NATO membership for Ukraine is almost a done deal. It's just we're just going to finish the paperwork. Now, Blinken then goes to Kyiv, and he makes no mention of NATO. They talk and they talk and they talk, and there's no mention of NATO. There's a great deal about America's commitment to Ukraine, but he doesn't say anything about NATO. Now, why is this? Well, the Biden administration knows that if Ukraine is in NATO, then the United States is on the hook. I mean, it's basic. United States is at war with Russia. That's not really what the United States wants. The United States does want to keep this war going, but doesn't care about the loss of lives, doesn't care about the waste of resources. America has plenty of resources to waste. But it doesn't want to get itself in a direct war with Russia. Now, Stoltenberg really doesn't care about that. Stoltenberg just says, well, that's great. You know, we've got this wonderful club. We're going to have 32 members in the next few weeks. So he wants Ukraine in, and that'll be his great triumph. But the Americans are saying, well, not so fast. You know, NATO is basically a collection of deadbeats and militarily inconsequential powers. The only power that matters is the United States, and the United States doesn't want to get itself into a war. So that's why, you know, Stoltenberg can go on saying what he wants to say. You know, he's the chairman of this, the board of this club. The United States wants to stay out of a very dangerous war for itself.
What's interesting too with Blinken's visit, though I thought it was very cringe, having a photo op at a cemetery, and that's Blinken's dirty work. This is his caper. Okay, I don't know who was doing the optics, but it was cringe worthy here. But it's interesting that during Blinken's visit to Kyiv, to give more money, of course, but I don't know, I was rather taken aback that he was talk so much about post-war Ukraine. I mean, where is this coming from? I mean, we don't know. I don't know if anybody really knows how this is going to be resolved, but he wants to talk about what Ukraine is going to be like afterwards, when we don't even know what Ukraine will, we won't even know what its geographical borders will be. Martin.
Is there anyone faintly objective about the Ukraine war, regardless of whether you take sides or not? I mean, anybody who is able to get some distance and look at the Ukraine war finds Blinken's narrative really banal. I mean, it really is just so weird how somebody can be so spectacularly misinformed. Is he misinformed, or is this delusion, or is this
even detached, even very much detached from
when you listen to those speeches? You think that you're watching a sort of media training session where, you know, the trainers have come up with this fictitious country and this fictitious war, and we can just talk about talking points and working on our key messaging. But this isn't real. We're not in the real world. You know, I've looked at some of those speeches in the past, and I just wonder, is this the result? Is this the culmination of years and years and years of Western disinformation fed from intelligence agencies to serve our media, gone to such an extreme, you know, where media now is just believing its own narrative, where you have the politicization of intelligence. And when you have the politicization of intelligence, unfortunately, the impact on media is 100 times worse, you know, and you have journalists who are just writing fiction, basically. And is Blinken the kind of personification of all of that? I'm wondering whether it is. I mean, we talk about NATO and Stoltenberg now, who's since Vilnius was given a one-year extension by Biden. You know, the corruption is just incredible. I mean, it just stinks. The entire organization for me just stinks. The decision to extend his term for 1 year can, for me, and I've written about this, I'm absolutely confident he wants Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission president, to take over next summer, exactly when the term is available, when the post is up, when Stoltenberg is out, is exactly the same month when she ends her term in the European Commission. And there's a double whammy there. Why does she need this job? Because I've noticed with elites, you may have noticed it too, that they protect one another. And dear Ursula, needs protecting. She is up to her neck in corruption allegations because of this massive Pfizer deal, which she signed off and that she was part of. And guess what? Oh, surprise, surprise. Her husband just so happens to own a company owned by Pfizer. Quelle surprise, you know, and more quelle surprise to come with that is that when various investigations, MEP level in the European Parliament, European Ombudsman, even the EU's own anti-fraud department themselves, when they all ask her, dear Madame President, can we just have your telephone to look at the text messages that you sent to Pfizer bosses? She says, oh, well, you know, these things are so ephemeral, and I think I just deleted them all. You know, the EU can swallow that BS, and it has done. But big media that has invested, like New York Times, German media as well, they're suing. You know, they're suing because they believe in old-fashioned values, which I used to believe in 30 years ago. You know, the power of the press, the importance of free speech. You know, those texts are not your property, Ursula. You know, and we need to see them. And I think what will happen at the end of her term...
Yeah, it just shows, George, that this is just a racket, okay? Yeah. That's what it is. It's really interesting, again, going back to, you know, juxtaposing Stoltenberg and Blinken. Remember, Stoltenberg was talking in front of a body that no one has probably heard of or even cares about is the European Parliament, which I give kudos. As usual, George, you know the name, that Irish MP, she actually pushed back, but we never heard the response from Stoltenberg. But it's interesting is that U.S. policy is shafting not only Ukraine, but also the European Union, okay, because it's really interesting. If Blinken is so obsessed with post-war, I mean, I guess he's going to foot the Europeans will foot the bill or something like that, and call, of course, you know, vulture capitalists. But it seems that it's a seamless program for Blinken, and it's basically about arms procurement. You know, we have this a money laundering operation, you know, where you send money, but it suddenly comes back to the suburbs of Virginia. It's a racket.
Yes, it is a racket. And as you say, the model that they've landed on is this model of Israel. That somehow, well, we won't actually have a formal military alliance, so that we won't actually be on the hook to go to war on your behalf, but we will be sending you an awful lot of military equipment, courtesy of American taxpayers. We're going to just be sending you this everything that you want, but you're still going to have to do the fighting yourself. Now, Stoltenberg, however, as he always repeats, one for all and all for one, you know, he has a very different model in mind that, you know, when, once Ukraine is in, then boom, we're all going to go and fight on Ukraine's behalf. And the Americans are basically saying no. I mean, they said that before Vilnius, And with Blinken, I mean, he's not even making any promises that there will be any NATO membership for you at any time. I mean, Stoltenberg says, yes, well, we've skipped the membership action plan phase, but that's just because we're really, really moving fast towards NATO membership. Well, the Americans are saying, yeah, we skipped the membership action plan because there's not going to be a membership. So there's no point in having a membership action plan. We're just going to be, sending you, everything. So now already they're saying, oh, we're going to send this ATACMS missile. So just going to keep doing it. But ultimately, I mean, we're just going to, you're going to be doing the dying. And again, the Ukrainians are the ones who have made this idiotic bargain. I mean, the Americans are, their military industry is humming. Americans are not getting killed. And all these American politicians like Mitt Romney and others, they're quite gleeful about it. Hey, this is a good bargain. Our industries are making money. We're not getting killed. Hey, I mean, if they're stupid enough to want to get shot up on the front lines, that's their lookout. So it's a very cynical operation. But there's been no pushback from the Europeans.
Well, also, Martin, again, going back to Blinken's trip, obviously I didn't see everything he had to say, but I saw large chunks of it. There's nothing about the counteroffensive, a plan B. It's all about, and George is right, not about NATO. It's just that how we're going to move forward after the conflict ends. The problem with that kind of magical thinking is that you're not taking the Russian side into account. I mean, when do they decide to stop fighting? When do they decide when they believe that they have secured their goals? And one of them is not NATO membership for Ukraine. So again, Blinken is completely disconnected from reality. Martin.
Disconnected, but I do like your phrase, Blinken's trip. What are you actually suggesting? You're suggesting he's sort of doing hardline narcotics or amphetamines. Probably before he makes those.
Well, I've heard that such things happen in Kiev, but we'll leave it at that. Okay.
Yeah. But where is all this heading? I think what we're experiencing now is a certain ambiguity, and I think the ambiguity is because we're running up to Joe Biden's supposed re-election stab, and so we don't really know where we are. There's also the fact that there is this huge gap now from a military perspective. Lots of talk of F-16s. I was quite shocked to see the headlines a few weeks ago of Biden administration approves European F-16s.
Hold that thought. I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT.
Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lell. This is the home edition to remind you we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Martin. Right before we went to the break, you were talking about European headlines. Continue, my friend.
Yeah, so we're just the latest headlines are is that something like 60 F-16s dating back to the 1970s will be procured from a number of European countries. But how this is going to happen and why America isn't contributing any themselves is rather odd, I find. And so there's a gap, there's a lull, and how do we fill that gap? You know, the earliest opportunity we will see F-16s in Ukraine, I think, will realistically be next summer. Some people are saying maybe spring, but I've just read today that the pilots, the Ukrainian pilots, will need to be sent to UK for training before they start the actual F-16 training. So what is the training in the UK? Is it language lessons, I'm wondering? You know, it's like the role of my country, honestly, in the Ukraine war is changing.
And Martin, also, I mean, the infrastructure that is needed to maintain these planes. Okay, they're old, but they're still sophisticated relatively for other air forces in the world. What about these airstrips? I mean, do they exist? And George, let me shift it to you. So will F-16 airstrips be somehow magically immune from being attacked? I mean, and then, you know, all of the spare parts, all the fuel and all of this. I mean, this is a major, major undertaking. I don't believe it's going to ever happen. I think it's just they're talking out of their sleeve, George.
Right. They're just sending more and more stuff. And of course, for Ukraine, it's going to be what's the next thing that they're going to need. I mean, we had all the drum beat. Oh, we need the tanks. We need the German tanks. So then they go, all right, you've got the German tanks. Now we need the American tanks. Okay, you've got the M1 Abrams tanks. No, well, now we need the F-16s. Okay, got the F-16s. Oh, well, now we need this ATACMS missiles. Okay, well, you've got that. So you've got always got the next thing that's going to turn the tide. And of course, it hasn't done so. I mean, and what was interesting is, going back to the point about Blinken's delusional talk, is that Blinken, for instance, said at Ukraine, well, this counteroffensive, very, very successful, basically 50% of what the territory Russia gained since it started its operations, 50% has been won back by Ukraine. And then you look at the Washington Post, you know, they actually showed the map. It's nothing like 50%. I mean, it's just, you know, they're just making this up, you know, to go, oh, we want 50% of the territories we want. Nothing like it. I mean, just, you know, the Ukrainians have won very small amount of territory back, but it's nothing like 50%. I mean, it's still an enormous amount of territory that Russia has gained. But you have to just keep fueling this this delusion. And the question is, you know, well, what's the end game here? And none of them, and here they do have something in common with it. Stoltenberg, Blinken, Sullivan, they're not able to spell out, well, what's your end game here? You say, we've got to show a democracy prevails over autocracies. Putin, you know, must be stopped. Europe must be safe from Putin. So again, you know, they're not able to spell out even what they're trying to do, other than, well, let's just keep this going and to tell everyone what a fantastic success it has been, which it hasn't been.
Well, just to continue with that, Martin, it's very interesting. You have these pundits saying, "Well, Russia's already been defeated, or it's losing." Okay, what was it, George? I think you're the one that pointed it out to me. Russia's a diminished power, a power that is being diminished, and then, well, that just brings up the question: if Russia it's on a diminishing trajectory. Those were the words. Then why should Ukraine be in NATO? They don't need NATO if they're diminishing Russia's military power. Second issue here, this obsession with square meters. I find that nonsensical. If you go back, again, if you just listen to what people say, or as Stephen Cohen would say, put yourself in the other guy's shoes, you know, the Russian objective is denazification and demilitarization. It's demilitarizing Ukraine. It's not seeking territory. per se. Now, that may change in the future when Russia has its own offensive. My point in bringing up those two points is that the narratives are so skewed. I mean, they're talking past each other. And I think that's an intentional gambit on the part of the Blinkens and all the rest of them.
The narrative is skewed. And it's, I think, the point made by Orban in the interview he did with Tucker was brilliant. He said, look, the West just doesn't understand Russia. And this is the heart of the problem. You know, you have this different ideas, different perspectives on democracy, the state building, and the future of how people consider their own countries. Russians place huge emphasis on the size and unity of their country first and foremost before so-called Western ideas of democracy and freedom and accountability to elected officials. And we don't get that. We don't understand that about Russia. Russia will never give in with this Ukrainian threat, no matter what the case is. And he made the second point is that Ukraine will never, ever have the numbers when we talk about soldiers, when we talk about boots on the ground. It will never be able to match what Russia is producing. And so, you know, the new idea is, well, OK, maybe the war should be moved. It should be transferred to the sky. Can we, you know, have a war of F-16s and MiGs? And that would be an amazing media distraction for at least 6 months or a year, just so we can get to 2024, you know, before. I would put money on Trump coming back in. I mean, I would literally put my grandmother's savings on it. I really do think it's inevitable. The further you turn the screws, the more you put the guy in jail, the more he's just guaranteed to run as president. But there is this delusion. There is this fog over this frontier. And the journalists are just playing along with this and producing more fake news. I mean, it's not being picked up. You know, it's interesting how Wall Street Journal very recently talked about Ukraine army making some sort of an achievement along that front line, the Russian defense line, three lines, in fact, of these concrete dragon's teeth. But it's not true. They didn't make it. I mean, if the Ukrainian forces break through those three lines of dragon's teeth, you don't think that's going to be on the front page of The Guardian faster than you can say, you know, where's Zelensky's $1 billion? It didn't happen. It won't happen. What you're having, what you're finding is some of the villages are on the other side. Some of the villages that Russia was holding on to are on the other side in the Ukraine side. And sometimes they give them up. They get bored of them. They get restless of them. You know, Ukraine forces take the village and suddenly everybody pulls out their cell phone and starts doing all these selfies, you know.
Yeah, I think one village, the population of at one time was 43 people. So, I mean, we're talking about not a village, we're talking about a hamlet.
Scott Ritter, a guy you have on the show often, said recently that there were a number of cases that he spotted of Ukrainian soldiers, officers, walking on foot and going through these dragon's teeth, taking selfies of themselves, posting them on social media, and then, you know, scuttling back to the. That's how pathetic it is. You know, that's really where we are with the Ukraine war.
Well, George, also in the mix here was the arrest of Igor Kolomoisky, believed to be one of the sponsors of Zelensky when he was running for president. Arrested on fraud, which none of us are surprised by, but this whole push to this anti-corruption. So it was like 15 minutes ago, you couldn't talk about corruption in Ukraine. Now it's like Zelensky's cleaning it all up, okay, though there still won't be an audit here. What do you read into that? Is it a consolidation? Because it seems to me that Zelensky's even more isolated and making him even more dependent on Washington. He doesn't have to listen to anybody in the European Union. He doesn't care because the Americans don't care. What's going on there? This cannot be coincidental.
Well, I think it is consolidation. It's a matter of ensuring that Kiev is completely subordinate to America's requirements. Now, Kolomoisky is someone that the Americans have never been very happy about. They think he's very untrustworthy. I mean, not just the corruption. They don't care so much that, you know, he likes money. I mean, you know, who doesn't? It's more that they think that he might just see if he can work out some kind of a deal with the Russians. He said things in the past, you know, some years ago, in which he pretty much said, what is obvious, but this was obvious to him, I think it was 2017, that the Americans are ready to fight to the last Ukrainian. They don't really care about our welfare. They're just using us as a battering ram against Russia. I mean, this is very obvious, but it was obvious to Kolomoisky 10 years ago. Well, when you blurt things like that out in interviews with the New York Times, the Americans really don't appreciate it very much. And they put Kolomoisky on the sanctions list already some time ago. And you know, now they're telling Zelensky, well, enough already. You know, you've got to get him out. You've got to get out all of the people around you who may think this is nuts. We need to work something out now. We're just being led to the slaughter by the United States. They don't care about us. You know, we're just a nice little tool. And I think they want everyone like that out. Arestovich is another one. I think they wanted him out as well. Anyone who actually talks some sense has got to be moved out of the way.
Martin, and those that remain still can participate and benefit from the grift, because every time an American official shows up, hey, we found another billion for you. You know, we found it in the cushions and the couch. We were really, you know, good for you, Martin.
Yeah, and isn't it extraordinary? Isn't it so funny that when we look at American and British press coverage of the Ukraine war, one thing we don't see, one thing that we should see but we don't see, is we'd never see profile pieces of Ukrainian officials. You know, now we do profile pieces of our own officials, our own ministers. You know, there's a big joke going around Britain now at the moment about this new defense minister our prime minister has just installed, who has no experience at all in the military, doesn't even know how to fire a gun. You know, but in Ukraine, we don't see these profiles of these top people, because that would be really difficult, wouldn't it? That would be really awkward. How do you do profiles on people who are living in multi-million dollar villas, you know, have a complete entourage of bodyguards and helicopters and own real estate in the Bahamas and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? There's a very, very funny picture circulating on social media. It might be faked. It might be photoshopped, but it's very funny. It's a picture of a Ukrainian lady, an MP, who's very media friendly. I won't name her. And the picture, there's a two picture, a double shot. One is at the beginning of the Ukraine war, where she's extremely skinny, holding an AK-47, smiling towards the camera. And a more recent photograph of her, how shall I say, being rather larger endowed, you know. And one wonders, you know, what do gangsters do when they suddenly get lots of money?
Well, you know, war can be a great diet for some, and certainly some Unfortunately, gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk News.